Paramahamsa Pari Vrajagacharya. Asatara Satyashri Srimad is Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Maharaj Prabhupada Ki Jai. ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki Jai. Namacharya Srila Haridas Thakur Ki Jai. Prem Shri Gaur Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Dvaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Shri Shri Radha Krishna Go Gopinath Shri Mukunda Radha Kundi Giri Govardhana Ki Jai. Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai. Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai. Navadvip Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai. Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai. Ganga Mayi Jamuna Devi Ki Jai. Bhakti Devi Ki Jai. Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai. Samaveda Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prastaya Bhutale. Srimate Bhaktivedanta Swami Niti Namine. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharni Nivasesa Sunyavadi Paskachade Sitarani. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yuta Padakamam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Stam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Parijana Sahita Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Ravita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Manchakapati Vishaki Pasanavi Vachapati Chinapavani Vaishnavi Namo Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So it's January 12th, 2022, in from Hilo, Hawaii, over the internet. Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 29, talks between Narada and King Prachinabari, text 60. Narada uvacha.
Narada uvacha.
Yenai varabhate karma.
Tenaiva
muratat puman.
Tenaiva muratat puman.
Bhunte yavyavadhanena.
Bhunte yavyavadhanena.
Lingena manasa swayam.
Lingena manasa swayam.
Please chant. Narada said.
Narada.
Yena.
Yena.
By which?
By which?
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Arabate.
Arabate.
Begins.
Begins.
Karma.
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 Fruit of activities.
Fruit of activities.
Tena.
Tena.
By that body.
By that
body.
Eva.
Eva.
Certainly.
Certainly.
Amutra.
Amutra.
In the next life.
In the next life.
In the next life.
Tat.
Tat.
That.
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 Puman.
Puman.
The living entity.
Living entity.
Living
entity. Bhunte.
Enjoys.
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 He.
He.
Because.
Because.
Because. Because.
Avyavadhanena.
Avyavadhanena.
Without any change.
Without any change.
Without any change.
Lingena.
Yeah.
By the subtle body.
By the subtle body.
Manasa.
Manasa.
By the mind. Swayam.
Swayam.
Personally.
Personally.
Srila Prabhupada's translation. The great sage Narada continued, the living entity acts in a gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body, composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer, thus there is no change. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The living entity has two kinds of body, the subtle body and the gross body. Actually, he enjoys through the subtle body, which is composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. The gross body is the instrumental outer covering. When the gross body is lost or when it dies, the root of the gross body, the mind, intelligence, and ego, continues and brings about another gross body. Although the gross bodies apparently change, the real root of the gross body, the subtle body of mind, intelligence, and ego, is always there. The subtle body's activities, be they pious or impious, create another situation for the living entity to enjoy or suffer in the next gross body. Thus, the subtle body continues, whereas the gross bodies change one after another. Since modern scientists and philosophers are too materialistic, and since their knowledge is taken away by the illusory energy, they cannot explain how the gross body is changing. The materialistic philosopher Darwin has tried to study the changes of the gross body, but because he had no knowledge of either the subtle body or the soul, he could not clearly explain how the evolutionary process is going on. One may change the gross body, but he works in the subtle body. People cannot understand the activities of the subtle body, and consequently they are bewildered as to how the actions of one gross body affect another gross body. The activities of the subtle body are also guided by the supersoul, as explained in Bhagavad Gita 15.15, Sarvasya Chahamriti Sannivistoma Tasmatir Gyanam Apohanam Cha. I am seated in everyone's heart, and from me come remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Because the Supreme Personality of God in a supersoul is always guiding the individual soul, the individual soul always knows how to act according to the reactions of his past karma. In other words, the supersoul reminds him to act in such a way. Therefore, although there is apparently a change in the gross body, there is a continuation between the lives of an individual soul. Narada uvacha yenai vara bhate karma tenai vamutra tat puman bhunte yav yavadhanena lingena manasa swayam. The great sage Narada continued, the living entity acts in a gross body in this life. This body is forced to act by the subtle body composed of mind, intelligence, and ego. After the gross body is lost, the subtle body is still there to enjoy or suffer. Thus, there is no change. Srila Prabhupada was a student at Scottish Churches College. The professors there were Christians, and they definitely had some motive of wanting to convert the Hindu students into Christians. And one of the professors made the point that he didn't see how reincarnation or transmigration of the soul was feasible, because who is going to remember what you did in your past life? So Srila Prabhupada said that at the time, he didn't argue with his professor. Srila Prabhupada came from a society and culture where, as he explains in Bhagavad Gita, one does not offer one's superiors even a verbal argument. I mean, such a concept is a little foreign to most of us in the world in 2022. I mean, even in a lot of the more collectivistic cultures of the world, the concept of respect for one's elders, one's teachers, one's parents, etc., is waning. And in some places like China was almost destroyed by the one-child policy, which destroyed family. All of a sudden, you know, you had no uncles, no aunts, no cousins, no brothers, no sisters, and so forth. And the whole family concept was destroyed. And the concept of adhering to traditions of your elders. But anyway, Prabhupada didn't argue with him. That was the norm at the time. But he was thinking, well, there's the supersoul who reminds you, and then there's a subtle body. And, of course, there's tremendous amount of empiric evidence. Srila Prabhupada writes about in this purport how Those who are maya pradita jnana, those whose knowledge are stolen by illusion and who are grossly materialistic, that they don't understand. And he was saying how Darwin tried to understand how there is all these different species, and Darwin tried to explain how, you know, lizards turn into birds and birds turn into mammals and so forth. But he didn't really get the subtle science behind all the different varieties of bodies, that the gross scientist can look and say, I remember we saw a video once in the Gurukul about these walruses or seals, I can't remember which, that live around the Antarctic, and they're have special adaptations for living in water that is nearly freezing. The water's like 32 or 33 degrees Fahrenheit. It's like at the freezing point. And how is it that these creatures can live in this water? So these sea mammals, they have some sort of adaptation in their breathing apparatus and in their fat and so forth. In other words, they're a variation on normal whatever seal or walrus template that allows them to survive and thrive in these very, very cold waters. And so according to evolutionary theory, you know, some ordinary seal somehow went into Arctic waters without this adaptation, and it had some children who had some, by chance, some slight variation already in that direction, and those children survived and the rest died, and those were the children that reproduced. And just like we can intentionally breed plants or animals, you know, they'll intentionally breed different species of dogs and different species of plants. And so Krishna Balaram learned this when they went to Sandipani Muni's school. And so this does happen, of course, on a microcosm level in the natural world, that there's slight variations within species that adapt to their environment. But Darwin took it a whole other level when he was saying that one species turns into another, although what we see in the natural world is a demarcation between species is the inability to interbreed and the inability to produce a new species. So that's what we actually see in the natural world. But really, it's not a question of just some chance random thing that there is one kind of creature in one habitat and another kind of creature in another habitat. What it is that the living entities have different desires and different karmas, and therefore they get different bodies in different habitats, and those bodies are designed to live in those habitats. And such is true even among human beings, though now there's so much intermarriage and so forth between human beings and movement around the planet, that such is not so much true anymore. Just like my ancestors came from Northern Europe, where there's not very much sun, and a lot of the year it's very cold, and you have to wear a lot of clothes, and so in order to get enough vitamin D, our skin is very fair, our eyes are light-colored, our hair is very thin, and all of this allows our skin to absorb more vitamin D, whereas we see that people who live in places that are more tropical, where they can be outside all year long, and the sun is very harsh, that they have more melanin in their skin, in their hair, in their eyes. Their hair tends to be kind of bushier to protect their scalp. They also have more oil-secreting glands in their skin, which is why when people from those climates move to a more northern climate, they don't age as fast. It's quite interesting. So we see even among human beings that there are different bodies that are designed for different types of inhabitants. People who live in very high altitudes, for example, like those who live in the Andes Mountains in South America, they have a higher lung capacity than those who live at lower altitudes. So this is not simply a matter of, well, human beings wandered around, and so those who were more adapted survived, and those who didn't died, but it's a matter of a person's activities and a person's desires give them a particular body in a particular environment. The family that we're born in, the type of body we have, everything. This body, if we look in the mirror and we look at the story of our lives, that we have crafted this. So we're going to look at this first, the process by which we get a particular body in terms of the individual's desire, and then we're going to look at the role of the super soul and the demigods. And then we're going to look, which Prabhupada does not discuss in this purport, we're going to look at how we undo the process. How do we unravel this thing? Because the ultimate idea of understanding this thing is how to get out. You know, that's the ultimate idea. So, you know, if we're analyzing, say, psychiatrists, psychologists, if they're analyzing trauma, the reason they're analyzing trauma and mental disease and neuroses is so a person can get cured. You don't want to stop at just simply analyzing the problem. Or a medical doctor, the reason they're diagnosing, you know, a disease is so they can have the proper treatment. Right? I mean, they do a test. If you have do this test and that test and the other test, because the treatment will vary according to the diagnosis, so you don't stop with the diagnosis. Of course, in a particular verse, in a particular purport, we may have an emphasis just on a diagnosis or just on a treatment and so forth. All right, so how does this process start? Well, it starts with identity. And generally, Srila Prabhupada uses the word false ego here at least twice, maybe three times in the purport. He's using the word ego. Our sense of self, our sense of identity. Who am I? So I'm listening to a conversation Srila Prabhupada's having where he says that people don't understand even the beginning, understand, you know, identity. Dehi no smenyata dehe komaram yovanandra dita dehan terapatir diras tatra namuyate. They don't understand the beginning thing, that I am not this body, that I am a soul. So the first identity is that I can enjoy separately from Krishna. That's the beginning of materialistic identity. That mind, Prabhupada says that our enjoyment should be through Krishna, with Krishna. But no, I can enjoy separately from Krishna. I mean, it's a very simple thing. And Jesus tells the story of the prodigal son. You know, the child who has a wealthy father, but he leaves. And he says, give me my inheritance now. Instead of giving me my inheritance when you die, give me my inheritance now. In traditional India, the girls would get their inheritance at marriage. That was their that was the dowry. It actually belonged to the girl, not to the couple. And the boys would get their inheritance at the death of the father, the death or the retirement into vanaprastha life. So anyway, he said, give me my inheritance now. And the father gave him his inheritance then, but he squandered it on, I think, riotous living in foreign countries. And then where he stayed, there was difficulty, and he went back to his father. But this idea, I'm going to enjoy independently. Let me take the power and the opulence that I have from Krishna, and let me enjoy it without Krishna. Not understanding that we're an amsa, mamaivamsa jivaloke, we're a part of Krishna. Prabhupada says, materially, we're like a cell in the universal body. And the analogy is very useful, because if some cells in my body rebel and say, I want to act independently, you know, normally the cells in my body, they help the health of my whole body, and then the body in turn has the full functionality to nourish each cell. And that's the way it works. The cells work for the good of the body, and the body then works for the good of the cells. But if the cells rebel, then they become cancerous. And it's interesting. Cancerous cells do flourish for some time. They often grow much faster than ordinary cells. Chemotherapy targets fast reproducing and growing cells. But then it cuts off its very supply of nourishment. It ends up killing the very body that is sustaining it. So if cancer runs its course, not only does the whole body die, but the cancerous cells and their descendants also die. So the rebellious living entity has an identity like that. The rebellious living entity has an identity of, I'm just going to be independent, which of course is not possible. As Krishna says, anything that appears to be without relation to me, that is maya. If you see, oh, this is valuable, but without relation to me. So when the living entity thinks like that, then the living entity gets desires for happiness separately from Krishna. I'm going to be the center. My happiness is going to be supreme. What I need, what I want, what I imagine. And from those desires come feelings, come various emotions, the perversions of all the secondary sthayi bhavas and the 33 vyavichari bhavas, and the actually all of the 12 sthayi bhavas and all of the vyavichari bhavas. These have their reflections, and we get these feelings of disappointment and anger and joy and friendship and chivalry and so forth. And these lead to thoughts. Actually, the feelings come first, and these lead to thoughts to justify the various feelings, to say that the feelings are okay, and how are we going to get more or less of these feelings. And then that leads to actions. Actions literally means karma, and karma, actions done on this basis lead to reactions. It puts you in a world where you want to be independent, then you're responsible. Like the parent says to the child, fine, you want to be independent, you don't want to depend on your mother and father anymore, fine. Then you're responsible to pay your own bills, you're responsible to get your own car, you're responsible to buy your own car insurance. And, you know, when you're still under the care of your parents, let's say you're 16, you're under the care of your parents, and you smash the family car, so the family has insurance on their car. And they may help you, they may take some responsibility for you. You know, you're a little child, you mess up at school, the parents will help you. But when you're on your own, they may not. They say, hey, you know, you've got your own insurance, you have your own your own responsibility for things. So it then produces karmic reactions. We can also say it produces karmic reactions because when I'm working in harmony with Krishna and Krishna's desires, when things are in sync, it's not that I don't have my own individual desires, but everything is in sync. Then everything is also in harmony with truth, because Krishna is the absolute truth. And therefore, the only reactions one gets are reactions that are within the realm of truth. Whereas when one is acting in falsehood, then the reactions one gets are in the realm of falsehood. So it starts with an identity, and that identity becomes, the specifics of that identity change from one life to another. So in one life, one may be an Indian woman, and the next life, one may be a Chinese man, or the next life, one may be a demigod, or the next life, one may be an Antarctic seal. But there's still the basic identity of, I am separate from Krishna. I am a separate enjoyer. I am enjoying on my own. Which leads to specific desires, which leads to specific feelings, which leads to specific thoughts, which leads to specific actions, which then get different reactions. And the reactions take the shape of a body, as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that there are senses grouped around the mind. And one example of this is that Srila Prabhupada gives an analogy of this, is that we have inner clothing and outer clothing. Now, all of them fit to the body. My shirt fits to my body, and my sweater or jumper or jacket also fits to my body. And so, in the same way, the body fits to the mind. And as the subtle body undergoes changes, it's the same subtle body, but as it has changes in desires and feelings and thoughts and changes in the specifics of its identity, so the gross body changes. And we're not able to have a gross body that can fulfill all of our desires. You know, that's not possible. It's just like you can't fulfill every desire in a female human body, and nor can you fulfill every desire in a male human body. You know, just there are certain things that can only be fulfilled in one of those bodies. And you can't fulfill all your desires in a bird body, and you can't fulfill all your desires in a squirrel body. So it really is a matter then of changing bodies. So I take one body where I fulfill some desires but not others. And I can get some karmic reactions but not others. I can't get all of my karmic reactions and all of my desires in a particular body. So just one lifetime can set off, you know, hundreds of lifetimes to fulfill all the different desires and all of the different karmic reactions. And then, of course, as I get that next body, I get more desires and more karmic reactions and so forth and so on, and it's just a big mess. Now, this is not only on the level of the soul. So far, we've just been talking about the level of the soul. But it's also on the level, as Prabhupada talks here, about the super soul. And he quotes Bhagavad Gita 15:15, Mamai Vamsa Jiva Loke Bhutasanat. No, not that's sorry, that's 15:7. Quotes 15:15, Sarvasya Chahamriti Sannivistoma Tasmati Gyanam Apohanam Cha. And that half, the first half of Bhagavad Gita 15:15, has been in our family a mantra for finding things. You know, I can't, where did I put my keys? Right? And we'll say, Sarvasya Chahamriti Sannivistoma Tasmati Gyanam Apohanam Cha. You know, please, Lord, give me knowledge and remembrance of where I put my keys. And sometimes it's remembrance because I put them somewhere, and sometimes it's knowledge. I remember one time that in the winter, I took off my big heavy jacket, and then I dropped my keys, and they dropped into the hood of my jacket. And because it was a big, heavy jacket, they didn't make any sound when they dropped. Then when I hung up the jacket, the keys were in the hood of the jacket. So that had to be giving me knowledge, Ganam, not Smritir, because I wasn't remembering where I put my keys, but I needed Ganam about where my keys had ended up. One time when I was traveling, there was a devotee who said to me, Urmila, I can't find my phone. And I said, well, why don't you chant 15:15? So this devotee started walking around the room saying, 15:15, 15:15. And I'm like, no, the verse, not the numbers. And so the super soul there, and also, of course, the demigods. So it's not that Krishna personally is managing everything. He has so many servants that manage, you know, what body we're getting and what circumstance we're in and how the body is working, all under the direction of the super soul. That the super soul is reminding us, like we might do to a friend. The super soul is, it says, Krishna says in terms of the super soul, I'm the witness and I'm the friend. Just like we may say to a friend, hey, you told me you like that girl. There she is. Go up. Go talk to her. Go talk to her. Or, you know, you told me you wanted a job in this field. Hey, I got a good opportunity for you. This is somebody, go there and take advantage of this opportunity. Or you say you really like this kind of food. Hey, they're serving it out at the temple right now. You know, they've got pumpkin pie there at the temple. Go get some. I know you really like it. So we may do this to a friend, and Krishna does this too. He goes, hey, hey, here's the situation. Here's this person. Here's what you wanted. And go for it, and get it. And again, the demigods are assisting with that. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't have choice. For example, let us say that in some previous life, somebody wronged us, and we wanted vengeance. And maybe in that previous life, it wasn't possible for us to get that vengeance. But now, Krishna has created a situation, the super soul and the demigods have created a situation where we could get that vengeance. And so we may be reminded, hey, this person here, this is somebody that you wanted to get vengeance. Now here's your opportunity. Now that doesn't mean that we have to actually do it, and that doesn't mean that if we do it, there's no karma. If we exact vengeance, then that we may be setting in line a karmic reaction. And so it's a choice sometimes, actually most of the time, when the super soul says, hey, here's a desire you wanted, here's the opportunity to fulfill that desire, then we have a choice as to how we're going to respond to that. Maybe I can respond to an enemy from a former life with forgiveness. I mean, like with Maharaj Chitraketu, it is said that his enemy from a former life took birth as his son and then died at an early age just to give him pain. And former enemies may become spouses or employers and employees or parents and siblings or brother and sister, parents and children rather, or brother and sister. And we then have a choice. Am I going to act out my revenge desires? Am I going to take advantage of my situation to hurt this person? Or am I going to soften my heart, and am I going to try to rectify my my mentality, my offended mentality? And the same thing, you know, like Prabhupada says in the Bhagavad Gita that Krishna gives people advice as to go to back to Godhead, or he gives people advice how to go to heaven, or he gives people advice how to go to hell. But that doesn't mean you have to take it. Just like we see as practicing devotees of Krishna, that sometimes Krishna gives us advice as to how to improve our Krishna consciousness, and we ignore him. And in a similar way, Krishna can say to someone, hey, you know, you wanted to do this criminal act, here's an opportunity, and you can say, you know, I think I'm not going to do that. So there's also an element of choice there. All right, so now we've done a diagnosis. We've done a diagnosis of how karma and transmigration work on an individual level and how it's facilitated by the super soul and the demigods, that they're aware of our desires from one life to another. They give us the appropriate body. They give us the various circumstances. They remind us of our desires and so forth. So how do we undo the process? Well, we can undo the process at many levels. On one level, we can undo the process by changing our activities. Now, we're not interested just in changing from sinful to pious activities, because pious activities also gets you another body. Then we'll just get a demigod body instead of a, you know, walrus body. But what we're interested in is not getting any more material bodies. Now, somebody may object, well, aren't we willing to take birth again, janmani, janmani, ishwari, bhavata, bhakti, ahoy, tuki, twaye? Aren't we interested in service, even if that means getting another material body? Yes, but that's on a higher platform. And the initial aspiration should be, I don't want to generate any more material bodies. So if the Lord wants to give me a physical body for service, that is a very different thing than if I get a material body because I have a desire to enjoy separately. Just like one may go into a prison because you have a job with the government. And a former prisoner can even get a job with the government so that they work in prisons. But it's very different to be in the prison because you're a criminal or to be in the prison because you're a government employee. So we're fine with taking birth in this world as Krishna's agent, but we're not fine with taking birth again and again in this world. Prabhupada says, do not take your birth again and again in this Kali Yuga, because things are getting really bad. So we're not interested in taking birth again and again because we're nonsense rascals, as Prabhupada would put it. So we can certainly change our actions, and a lot of sadhana bhakti, especially Vaidhi sadhana bhakti, is focused on changing actions. Okay, wake up early, take a bath, go worship the deities, you know, offer your food, eat the prasadam, read the scripture. You have this kind of checklist. Rupa Goswami gives 64 angas of bhakti, and some of those angas have many, many, many activities within them, like, say, an anga of deity worship or an anga of meditation. And some of them are very simple, like take the charanamrita. But these are different actions that one can do. Yes? But also Rupa Goswami says that sadhana bhakti begins with thinking of Krishna. So just to change the actions is going to take a long time, because the idea of changing the actions is that it changes the subtle body. If you don't change the subtle body, then the actions are going to fall away after some time. And we see that. You know, we recently had a start of a new year, and people make New Year's resolutions where they try to change their behavior, but because they haven't changed their feelings and their thoughts and desires, you know, it just doesn't work. I have the same thoughts, I have the same feelings, and so I'm going to have the same old actions. So bhakti is not only changing the gross body, it has to change the subtle body, and that's the mind, intelligence, and ego. So to absorb our intelligence, which is one of the reasons why we have these classes, to absorb our mind, which means also thinking, feeling, and willing. So we change our desires, we change our emotions. But the most important change to make is on the level of identity, because the ego is what's driving the whole thing. That's the driver, that's the root, Prabhupada says at least twice in this purport, the root of the gross body. Yes, isn't that the word he uses? Let's look back here. I think he used the root. So, the root of the gross body. Use at least once, maybe twice. So it's just like any kind of plant. Where I'm staying now, I stay in a little room that's close to Tulsi's greenhouse in the temple, and there's a gravel walkway between where I stay and the temple. So because a lot of people walk on it, it compacts the soil and tends to prevent weeds from growing. But on the edges of the pathway where people don't walk, we get a lot of weeds. And of course, if you let the weeds grow there, they will eventually try to spread out and obscure the walkway. So what one has to do is pull out the weeds by the roots. And of course, if you do that when the weeds are very small, it's extremely easy. So if you do it on a wet day, when the weed is really, really tiny, it's very easy to pull them out by the roots. If you let them get well established, it's much harder. But if you pull them out by the roots, then at least that particular weed isn't going to come back. You know, out in the garden, there's new seeds that come and new weeds will grow despite your best efforts. However, with the science of bhakti, that at a certain point, Krishna helps us. and eventually he gives us a... He makes the soil such that there's no new weeds that can grow. Otherwise, we'd be pulling out weeds eternally. But we want to get to this root of the gross body, which is our identity. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada stressed and stressed and stressed over and over and over that our primary teaching and understanding is that I'm not this body, I'm not this mind. I am a soul, and I am a servant of Krishna. Now, how do we know that we're working on the root? How do we know we're working on our identity? Well, one way we can know is how seriously we take the thoughts, feelings, and desires that pass through the mind and intelligence. And we can see, even as devotees, that many times we become caught up in the thoughts, feelings, and desires of the material mind and intelligence and false ego. And sometimes for years we become overwhelmed. But one should be able to see. I remember when I newly joined the Hare Krishna movement and I was talking to the temple president, Sri Govinda's wife, Trileka, in Evanston. And I don't remember what problem I brought to her, and she looked at me and she said, just don't identify with the mind. I was reading something the other day from a person who wrote that when they were really focused on their chanting, the other thoughts became just some background, indistinguishable thing. That it's just part of the machine. What's very important to remember is that as long as we have a subtle body, thoughts, feelings, and desires will enter into that subtle body. But Krishna says, like rivers going into the ocean, which remains still. Bhaktisiddhanta talks about beating our minds with sticks and shoes. Jed Bhattat, it said that he had waves of dissatisfaction after being insulted by King Rahugana, but he just tolerated it. So basically, not repressing. Repressing is a really bad idea. That doesn't work. But this detachment. Actually, when Prabhupada was asked how we came to the material world, he would often quote the Bhagavad Gita verse, Icha Dvesha, in chapter 7 of Bhagavad Gita. Attachment and anger. Attachment and hatred. So we don't want attachment to the subtle body, but nor do we want to hate it. It just is. It's just part of Krishna's material energy. Sometimes it's affected by tamagun, and we feel, you know, in our subtle body there's disappointment, there's laziness, there's hopelessness, there's despair, like that. Sometimes rajagun is there in our subtle body, and then we feel, you know, energetic and enthused and and we're going to conquer the world, and we're going to be a big, important person, and everyone's going to praise us, and so forth, and so forth. And then sometimes sattva-gun is affecting our subtle body, and then we're just, hey, you know, I don't really want anything to do with this world. I'm just interested in liberation. I'm just going to kind of peace out and chill out and just get away from the fray and do my own little thing and grow my own little garden and let the world go its own way. So these things go through our body and mind and in our subtle body, and it's a question of saying, it's not me, whether it's tamagun, rajagun, or sattvagun. And sometimes, and you just have to wait for it to pass. I mean, sometimes there's just, as Krishna says, the different modes are always vying for supremacy. And sometimes there's tamagun there, and you just wait for it to pass. Just like we deal with the weather. Matras parshas tukantaya sitos na sukadukadu agama payano nijas tamsatikshas sabarata. You know, we had a couple weeks ago, we had weather here that was like springtime. We were wearing t-shirts and sandals and flip-flops and, you know, and now it's cold again. And then, you know, we had that weather for a week and then it snowed. And now we're having to wear socks and coats and sweaters and cheddars. And it passes. The cold weather passes, the warm weather passes, the rain passes, the wind passes, the sunshine passes. In the same way, our feelings of happiness and distress and desire, they pass. And we just go about our business. So that's part of identifying with the soul. That's part of identifying with the soul, we could say, in a negative way. That we don't identify with these changing things in the subtle body. And in a positive way, we identify with, I'm a servant of Guru and Krishna. I mean, even for a neophyte, it can be a very tangible, positive thing. What's the mission of Srila Prabhupada? What's the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? What's the mission of my Guru Maharaj? And it's just very simple. Now, of course, that way of thinking can be a disguise for materialistic ego. If it's, you know, well, I'm, instead of identifying myself in terms of my nationality, you know, I'm Spanish or I'm French or I'm American or something, well, I'm an ISKCON member. Well, I'm a Chaitanya Gaudiya Math member. Well, I'm a, you know, Tengalai Sri Vaishnava member. And we can identify ourselves according to our particular, you know, religious or organizational thing, which is temporary, by the way. So that's also an upadhi. So sometimes that, or even, you know, I'm a good sadhaka. I'm a fixed up sadhaka. So these are all another brand of upadhi, another brand of designations. We have to be careful. That happens all the time. But still we can go to this, I am a servant of my guru, I am a servant of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mission. And we're so fortunate that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has this mission of bringing Krishna consciousness to the world, because it gives us such a variety of scope for desires. As Prabhupada would say, Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped. And he says the way to conquer kama is, instead of making plans to enjoy this world, you make plans how to spread the mission of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And that can be done even at our work or with our family or whatever. It's not a question that one has to be full-time working for an institution in order to have that kind of a desire. And we start cultivating those desires, and gradually as we do so, the subtle body starts dissolving and our real spiritual body and our ultimate desires start manifesting. And gradually at some point we transition to Raganuga Sadhana Bhakti, where one starts thinking, how can I please Krishna as a servant, or how can I please Krishna as a friend, or etc. And we come to that more specificity on our ultimate eternal identification. But this starts with, how can I please Lord Chaitanya's mission, and how can I please the mission of my Gurudev? So just to act on the gross platform is insufficient. The ultimate lesson of a verse and purport like this is not just to understand the workings of the material energy, which is certainly very important. It's not just to get a good diagnosis, but it's to understand what is the treatment. And the treatment is, I have to act also on the level of the subtle body. What I do with my subtle body matters. In fact, it matters a lot more than what I do with my gross body, because it is the root of what I do with my gross body. So questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements.
Sorry, that was while watching. Sorry, I had to mute. I hesitate to ask this because it's not exactly in relationship to everything you just spoke about, the mind, the subtle body, etc., but kind of in relationship to that. Recently, somebody asked me, can you define what's the difference between the intelligence and the mind? And I had a hard time relating what the difference is. I know you're really good at this. Could you say in a simple
This is something that perhaps I'm not really good at. In the mind is thinking, feeling, and willing. The intelligence is much more giving a direction. So the intelligence gives more of a vision. If you think of it, let's think of some sort of a company. So the company has a vision. Right? Let's look at a company that I'm sure we're all familiar with, which is Amazon, and I'm not neither praising nor condemning it, just looking at it. So they have a vision of ultimate customer service. And I've heard that Bezos is now trying to have some vision of employee to make it the best place to work. But their vision was ultimate customer service. And then you have intelligence. You know, so that's kind of your identity. We're going to be a company that supplies everything. And intelligence gives kind of a vision of what that would look like. Well, it would look like people can get what they order in a couple days. They can have easy returns and, you know, things like that. I mean, like, I just got a pair of shoes, and once I got them, they didn't fit, and trying to return them is a pain. You know, I thought, boy, you know, better just buy an Amazon, because if I don't like something, I can just stick it outside my door and they just come and pick it up. So that's from intelligence. And then the thinking, feeling, and willing on the platform of the mind is your specific plans for how you're going to execute that. All right, we're going to feel excited about doing this prime thing, and how are we going to feel about different things, and we're going to arrange it's arranging the details, figuring out the details of the vision. And then on the gross body, it actually enacts the vision. But the vision is coming from the intelligence. The intelligence is a product of Rajagun, which means it's very active. It's interesting that the mind is a product of Sattvagun, and the most natural place for the mind to be is actually very passive. Interestingly enough. And the mind always has to follow some superior dictation. So the intelligence is dictating to the mind what to do. Or you could think of it like the intelligence is the board of directors and the mind is the employees. Now, what's interesting is in, let's say, in hypnosis, which I'm familiar with, basically, you quiet the accepting and rejecting function of the mind. You get the mind into it, which, and hypnosis, Jai Dwaitamaraj and I have had quite a few talks on this, God, decades ago, that hypnosis is very similar to a yogic trance. And what you do is you basically quiet the accepting, rejecting function of the mind. You put the mind into a very quiescent state, and then you deal directly with the intelligence, so that you can change the vision of the intelligence. And when you change the vision of the intelligence, then the mind, which again naturally wants to follow some superior dictation, will follow that. To try to change the mind without changing the intelligence is very, very difficult. Just like trying to change the activities of the gross body without changing the mind, it tends not to stick. So you can change someone's behavior, where they say a man convinced against his will is of the same opinion still. You can change someone's behavior by punishments and rewards and threats and supervision and fear. But if they don't change their mind, the activities of the body will go back as soon as the externals are gone. And if you don't change the intelligence, it's very hard to change the mind. Again, it won't be able to do it. So you'll try to set up some mental habit, some change in mental habit. But without changing the intelligence, the change in mental habit will not stick. And if you want to change the intelligence, then you have to work on the platform of identity. So if you work on the platform of identity, then you get a solid change in the intelligence, then you get a solid change in the mind, and then you get a solid change in the body. So I don't think I can explain this very well, but I hope that I've at least helped to shed a little ray of light on it.
The simple one about the employees and the director is good, but everything else was good. Yeah, it's good. But anyway, that one simple example is good. Thanks.
Thank you very much for your class. If someone is, say, has a tendency that they're angry or so-and-so is generous or whatever, is that their nature or is that the modes of nature that they're operating under?
All right. So when you say their nature, what do you mean by that?
A devotee, Raghunath, who has a daily podcast, he said, I open myself up and I get hurt. And Vaisheshika Prabhu was his guest. He said, what can I do about it? And Vaisheshika Prabhu said, that's just your nature. There's not much you can do about it. You're, you know, a trusting person.
All right. All right. So I'm not sure if I can share my screen. I don't seem to have any...
Well, I have to invite you. I'll do that.
Okay. And I don't have much time because I have to give a class at the Gurukul in a half an hour. Let me pull up this thing, and if you can invite me. Okay, start sharing. Yeah, but I don't have the thing up yet to share. Okay. Oh, Zoom is so much nicer than this. Krishna, give me a minute here. I can't see it. It won't let me see. Maybe if I just look for this.
Ramananda, can you help her find that?
No, it's not that. It's that I have to have the file already up. And... I'm just going to decline the offer for a minute. And I have to get the file first, and then you have to send me the invitation, because it's not nearly as elegant as Zoom. Okay, can you send me the invitation again, please? Okay. All right, can you see this?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. So here we have, according to Ayurveda, what is one's nature? Now this is, and Ayurveda talks about physical nature, but also mental nature. So one can have a mental nature of vata, pitta, or kapha, or some combination. In fact, the combination is very, very common. And then we also move through the modes. So let's look at Kapha nature in tamas. So a Kapha nature in tamas is going to be dull, gross, lethargic, apathetic, slothful, coarse, slow comprehension, insensitive, maybe a thief, indolent, and excessive sleep. If you have a Kapha nature and you're in Rajagun, you're going to be controlling, attached, greedy, materialistic, sentimental, needing security, seeking comfort and luxury. If you have a Kapha nature in Sattva, you're going to be calm, peaceful, pure, content, stable, self-controlled, consistent, loyal, service attitude, loving, compassionate, forgiving, patient, devoted, receptive, nurturing, supportive, strong faith, and generous. Now you can see the difference between a sattvic influence on the three types. So someone who's naturally vata is going to be energetic in sattva, whereas someone who's naturally kapha is going to be calm in sattva. And the same if you look at rajas, you're going to see that among the three natures, they're going to manifest differently. So what we behave like is a combination of our basic nature, which is coming from previous lifetimes and samskaras, desires and samskaras from our previous life and from our nurturing in this life, especially in the womb of our mother and in very early childhood, and what modes we are choosing to be influenced by. So those two things combine. So what we can change is we can change what modes are influencing us, or ultimately to change to be influenced just by bhakti. What is almost impossible, it's not impossible, but for all practical purposes, it's impossible to change in this life, is our basic nature. I mean, it's just like you can't really change from a human to a lizard in this life. You know, you can tattoo your skin to look like scales and you can implant horns under your forehead, but you can't really become a lizard. You know, and we don't, modern science can't really change you from a male to a female or vice versa. All they can do is make you a eunuch. You know, there's subtle science, like in the Bhagavatam Mahabharata, that can change a person from male to female, or can change you from, you know, human to animal. Their brahmanas could curse somebody and, you know, boomf, you're an elephant, or boomf, you're a lizard.
Sorry, I had to mute somebody.
Yeah, so in subtle science, you can actually say, you know, okay, now you're a demigod, now you're a demon, now you're this, now
you're... Amila Mataji, do you know that you are muted?
I am muted.
You're,
Okay, there we go. So in subtle science, you can change a person's nature. So, you know, the brahmanas could curse somebody that now you become an elephant, or now you become a pig, or something like that. And they could change you from male to female, and female to male. So the brahmanas did have ways of working with subtle science to change your nature. But generally that doesn't happen. But what we can, not in this life, we can change our nature for the next life, but what we can change is what modes we're influenced by, or if we're not influenced by any of the modes. All right, and I need to attend to my next class and to get ready for that. So,
okay, it'd be great if we could have access to that file.
Well, let's see.
But we can do that later.
There we go. Did it show up in the chat window for everybody?
No.
That's weird. Now did it show up in the chat window?
Yes, now it's there.
All right, there you go. All right, I really do have to go. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.